Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Star Center Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Unarian Revelations, I'm honored to have Lonnie Calvert and William Proctor. The topic will be applying Unarian principles to the vocational arena in one's life. Greetings and welcome, Lonnie, and greetings and welcome, William. It is so great to have you here.
Oh,
greetings.
Great.
I didn't hear the first part of the title. Was that omitted on purpose?
the Star Center Olympus part?
No, about the job from hell.
Job from hell.
I thought that was to remain just in the promo, but okay. Today's topic is how to handle jobs from hell.
There you go.
And that's a rough area because we live in times of challenge and hardship for very many people, and opportunities have moved digitally, and people are finding working in the situations that they knew before a lot more difficult. We're not really post-COVID yet, but as COVID starts winding down.
Yeah, and I wanted to clarify that title too, just, you know, to start out with that, is because I love my work, and I know William does too, to whatever degree. So what I'm talking about is the fact that since we're both independent contractors, you know, we deal with a lot of different, you know, people and jobs and situations and stuff. And so, you know, you're bound to run into something that is, you know, stressful or, you know, problematic, and that's what we're talking about, not that we don't like our jobs.
Okay.
Our general work.
Yeah, like the most average person, you know, out here, if they're not working any kind of self-realization or working the science such as Unarius, they do look at their jobs from hell. But what we're learning as being Unarius students is to turn those jobs from hell into jobs from heaven.
Quite a feat, and that has been awesome insight to know. How do you go about doing that?
Well, for myself, I have been in business for myself most of my life, and before Unarius, I was a very material person. I wasn't working any kind of a science of life, or really had no idea of any spiritualism except for religion, which, you know, I was personally brought up in the church, you know, through my parents. And so I was always looking to make money. Money was always a focus. And it wasn't until I got into Unarius where I found out that it was the money that I had the worst problem with, is because I put a focus on it. And in that, working people, working jobs, it was all about money, and it wasn't about trying to make a better life spiritually, but it was looking at it on a material basis. And even people that were working for me, you know, after I got into Unarius, I realized that people that worked for me were actually slaves from my past, where, you know, I always reacted on paying them for, you know, for this and this and that, and trying to get out of cheap ways. But to make a long story short, when I got in Unarius, I had a whole different focus on life, and those jobs turned out to be, you know, how can I work a job and do it on a spiritual nature? And that's what Unarius has taught me how to do through the years.
Thank you so very much, William. Lonnie, would you want to add to and expand on that?
Well, just in general, my work is in the field of music therapy, which I've been doing for over 25 years. And, you know, the fact that I haven't burned out is because I've been able to utilize these principles that we learn in Unarius in my work. So, you know, some of those things are, as you know, and have been expressed in prior podcasts, that, we learn to take responsibility for everything that happens in our life. So instead of pointing out that, you know, it's my boss or, you know, it's this patient that I work, you know, it's this crappy situation, you know, I'm not getting paid enough, whatever it is, of pointing out, of learning that, you know, whatever I did in my past created my present, and if I don't like it, I can change it for the future. And in fact, if I want my future to be different and better, more positive, then I need to change it. So, you know, there's that, which is, again, has been mentioned many times, but it's learning about the fact that we're energy beings living in a sea of energy, that we've lived hundreds or even thousands of lifetimes, some as male, some as female. And so in the course of those lives, we've experienced many shocks and traumas, and they're going to resurface until that energy, which we say is stored in a psychic anatomy or your spiritual body or energy body, not your physical body, until those energies are changed, then that situation, that person, you know, albeit look in a different body, in a different physical body, or, you know, the job is slightly different, but those same situations and those same persons, you're going to run into them over and over until you work out, you know, what the karma is, what the trauma is between you two. And so, you know, many people will say, you know, again, they're pointing their finger outwards, because if you just look at this one life, it's like, well, I didn't do anything to this person. You know, why are they treating me this way? Or, you know, I've done nothing wrong. And, you know, possibly you haven't. But if you look farther to the big picture of the many, many lifetimes that we've lived, then probably you were on the other end and you did do something to that person. And even though neither of you maybe consciously remember it, that energy is affecting your relationship. So that's what the whole point of, you know, past life therapy and looking into what we did. It's not, you know, to say, well, I was a, you know, king, or, you know, I was a movie star. It's to say, you know, what did I set in motion? What negative energy did I set in motion in the past that's now resurfacing and is playing out between me and this other person or in this particular job? So there's those factors, then, you know, realizing that obsessions are real. You know, it's not just, you know, something that you find in sci-fi. There's thought forms obsessions, and there's astral or astral entity obsessions. And when we're upset, we're emotional, we're angry, we're negative, you know, we're critical of, you know, when in the middle of the problem, it's hard not to be when you're in the middle of it. But when we are in that state of mind, that lower frequency, then those astral entities can attach themselves to us and actually work through us and do some pretty nasty things, you know, that we may not even remember doing. And so, you know, becoming aware of these things, and when you really see where you have, you know, let's say a boss, you know, this boss that's, you know, berating you and picking on you or whatever, where you have done that to them in the past, and you have true remorse over it. I mean, you can't change anybody else, but when you have a true recognition, it cancels out those negative waveforms in your own psychic anatomy, and everything around you will change in response to the new energy that you're radiating. And I have personal examples of that you know, that I could give, and I'm sure William does too, but they're a couple of them are fairly long, so I don't want to...
That's okay. Well, just looking at the whole issue of past life therapy, Unarius pioneered past life therapy, and Unarius focused on past life therapy long before it became as integrated into our society as it currently is. So kudos to Unarius for bringing it to us and developing it a great deal. But as you were speaking, I kept thinking that people who don't know that there's more than one lifetime, all they have is the time between birth and death. And a lot of that time is spent working. So if they think that there's oblivion ahead of them, it becomes even more hellish to be stuck in circumstances that you're not happy with or are not fulfilling to you or are making you miserable. And understanding how past lives work and being able to access memories from past lives at least gives meaning to what you're going through and allows you the opportunity to do something different, to do something positive. So that in and of itself is phenomenally powerful.
Yeah, and yeah, turning it around not only for the present, but for future lives. Go ahead, William, sorry.
Well, what I love about Unarius, it's taught me who, what, and why. And so when I'm out here in the world, whether or not it's an employee that works for me, but also to recognize that, you know, I have, within the past year, I've had over 300 referrals. You know, what I do is I remodel houses and I go in and tear them out and put them back together in a much nicer way. That's what we try to do, but also recognizing in the past where I tore down buildings on purpose. You know, I was a destructive person. And I wouldn't have ever seen that if it hadn't been for Unarius, because it taught me that as I tore these places down, you know, now I have a chance to turn that around in my present life and put them back together. And these people that I work with, my clients, they were in the past, they were partners, they were, you know, business partners, we fought over money, all this kind of thing. And there's an example that I can share real quickly. Recently, it just so happens that within the last 2 months, I took on a job that I really didn't want because I had a reaction to the owner, you know, that was begging me to do the job, but not to mention his particular nationality, but I just had a problem with the way they paid. You know, they wanted this and this and that for nothing and things of that nature. And I'll tell you, you know, why I had that reaction. But I went ahead and took the job and started doing it, and there were some extras, you know, that came up. There was some plumbing issues that wasn't seen. And when I tried to collect on those extras, he didn't want to pay it because he said, well, that's in your estimate. And I said, no, it's not. You know, there's things that I couldn't estimate because it was unseen things.
Right.
And I went around with it and around with it, and I'll tell you what. I usually get along with everybody and usually always work it through, but this particular one caused me a lot of stress. And, you know, I was accusing him of not wanting to pay money, wanting things for nothing, and it went back and forth. And I finally had to sit down and look at myself and say, you know what? The one of the principles of Unarius is self-reflection. What is this man reflecting to me? And suddenly, just by asking the question, he was reflecting everything that was within me, because I could see myself even in this life of where I tried to, before Unarius, I was trying to get things for nothing and things of that nature. And I said, you know what? I got to learn to love him, because that's the way this whole thing is going to work. And I just left it at that. I didn't talk to him.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, within the next week, he started texting me on my phone about the money that he was putting in my account. And I couldn't believe it. It just changed. I mean, I was looking at losing on the job, and he just pops up. And after the recognition of what I was seeing him as a reflection, it totally changed the energy. He started paying me on money that I wasn't even asking for.
Oh, wow.
And the job turned out, it finished. And he's invited me over to dinner. And it's unbelievable. It's just, well, I can't say it's not believable, because It's the true principles of Unarius. It works. If you just sit back and take the hit upon yourself, you know what? You can point your finger at somebody all day long, but there's three fingers in your hand that's pointing back at yourself.
I never heard that expression before. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Lonnie?
So do you want a personal example?
Sure. If you care to share one, I'd like to hear it.
Okay. So I will save some of the music ones, music therapy ones, but I had done music therapy for about 12 years, a locally college, community college, and their funding was suddenly cut, and I was mostly out of work. And as a long-term student, I knew that when one door closes, another opens. And it turned out that there was another elderly student who had contracted MRSA while she was in the hospital, and she needed a caregiver for nights. Now, I was raised without doctors or medicine, so I didn't even know what MRSA was, but mm-hmm. I thought, well, I'll help her for a little while, and she'll get over it, and then I can start job hunting. In the meantime, it would help pay my rent. So since I'd known her for a long time, we always hugged, and sometimes I kissed her on the cheek, and my job was preparing her meals, giving her lots of meds, recording them, and helping her to dress and go to the bathroom and stuff. And I'd been unconcerned and doing all this without gloves. And then after I was there a while, I found out from another student who was a nursing assistant that MRSA is a bacteria, contagious, and this woman's doctor had ended up infecting the whole ward. And then I started to be aware of, like, itching and pinpricks and other sensations because I was there throughout the night, you know, so I'm laying in bed when she's asleep on the bed or couch or whatever. Anyway, but I knew at this point, you know, from Unarius, that fear would just be a negative frequency that was conducive to bacteria and lower astral entities, et cetera. And I also knew that my concern came from past lives when I was involved with creating or spreading diseases on purpose. And I thought about Florence Nightingale not being affected by the people that she helped that had contagious diseases. So if I could raise my frequency and find the positive, they wouldn't be relative, and I would repel rather than attract them. And that was part of conceiving frequency in action. And so after the realizations, I no longer had the itching and pinpricks. There was a lot more with this job. This is my job from hell, okay, that was in the title. So after a few weeks of this, I saw she wasn't getting any better, but she was going downhill, and the job was becoming more challenging. And what was a sweet friend was becoming someone else. She started getting mad more often and saying no to everything that I offered to do. She'd call a mutual friend and tell him that I refused to do the same things that I had offered to do. And no matter what I would say or how nice I tried to be, she'd criticize and put me down. And so it was an exercise in patience and holding my tongue. And I recognized another life where, as a very self-sufficient person when I was confined to a wheelchair, actually we did a psychodrama of this, and I was no longer in control of my life, I became very self-centered and miserable. So I could empathize that, you know, besides her physical pain, not being in control of her body and life was very frustrating. And then I had my first realization where I took her money and taunted her and derided or laughed at her helplessness. So it's like as I'm going along and I'm experiencing the negative, I'm trying to apply different principles as they come to mind, and I'm writing in my journal about them at night. So that's every night when she would fall asleep, I would write. And I had several days in a row where I wrote, tonight is the worst so far, because things were continuing to escalate. And I thought right here I would read one journal entry just to give you an idea of what was going on. So I wrote, when I arrived tonight, she was hysterical and hallucinating. It happened to be raining with occasional thunder and lightning. She told me that the rainwater was mixing with fuel under the mobile home and that either the lightning or bombs from the planes overhead was going to set fire to it and kill us all. She had both a cordless phone and a cell phone close to her, and so she was trying to call the United Center, then the fire department, then the police, the students, her friends. I tried calmly telling her that it was just the rain, but the more I said that, the madder she got and the more hysterical. She called me the devil. She said I was dumber than a jackass, that if she had a weapon, she would kill me, and on and on. And all the time that she was, this was going on, she was trying to dial one phone or the other in order to get out an SOS. I got one of her friends on the phone. That didn't help. But luckily, she wasn't lucid enough to dial an actual number and was hallucinating enough that she tried to talk to people on top of the dial tone on the cordless phone and without dialing on the cell phone. So I sat on the couch and watched her fingers to make sure she didn't dial 911 and ended up awake with her most of the night. And I didn't want to create a scene, so I waited patiently for the time she wasn't looking to get the phones and put them out of sight. And that was a big relief. But anyway, so a subsequent visit to her doctor, he called it delirium. And I'm giving these details because it'll make more sense when I tell you the realizations that I had about my past karma, life karma with her. So she was often very lucid in the mornings, but then she would get progressively worse. So I suspected it was one or more of the meds that she was taking throughout the day because she had to take so many. But I also felt as a student that she was seeing probably things that did happen in a past life. And with the help of the drugs, those traumas were more vivid than her present reality. So anyway, all of this time, one of my tasks was to keep a log of what she ate, she drank, and meds she took. And what I realized is that in a past life, I wanted her money and to hurt her for insulting me. And so I told everyone how she was hallucinating, and I probably made things up to add to the craziness and severity of it all so that I could get her committed to an insane asylum. And I was the one who had to convince her to take the meds in the present, which were apparently causing the delirium. So reinforcing this, I kept having thoughts about, you know, if I would have enough money to pay my rent before she suddenly told me not to come anymore. And then as far as past life therapy and Unaris is concerned, I remembered another lifetime during the time of Pizarro when she was Almagro, and I was a native interpreter. And at one point, I was supposed to accompany him. She was a male in that life. And I betrayed him by telling the natives to attack because the Spanish only wanted their gold. And there was more things, too. But he hated me. And he said in that lifetime he wanted to tear my body apart with horses. So that's our karma and what she was feeling, if not conscious remembering. And this was my opportunity to turn it around. So I'd gotten to the point, at that time I was just uneasy every time I thought about her, and I dreaded going back. You know, I felt like she read the log when I wasn't there, and then that was one of the reasons that she thinks I'm evil. And then the other factor that came to me is that, you know, and these are all principles. That's kind of why this is long, because I'm including the principles as I go. The other factor was that her negative, critical, angry state of mind allowed the astral obsessive entities to come through her. And my concern tuned me into them as well, you know, as well as my, you know, guilt and, the experiences I'd gone through for them. So I realized I had to do something more, you know, as a student. And at the time, I was preparing to talk on a panel about angels at a Spanish expo. And so I was studying this topic, and it was really just what I needed, reading about my guardian angels and archangels while I was going through this personal battle of Armageddon. So wrapping it up, when I got there this particular night after I'd been studying, and you know, it didn't look good. She'd already told a friend how negative she was and sent her out to the street. But, you know, it was like I was armed with this new frequency of knowledge of our past and the help from my spiritual teachers and the guardian angels. And when I came in, she was moaning in pain, but she didn't call me any names. She asked if I could take the pain away and help her go home, which to her meant to the inner. And
are you okay, Lonnie?
Yeah. Just hang on a sec.
Sure.
Kind of re-experiencing it. Anyway, I sincerely and lovingly told her that I wish I could help her. And I asked if she would like me to rub some of her oil on her. And she did, so I did it as tenderly and with as much love as I could. And I focused on the brothers. They have lenses that they use on the inner that are focused to help remove some of the negative energies. And, you know, everything I was learning about the brothers and my aura and so forth, I was trying to keep in mind. And so as I did so, I felt the power coming through and tears started flowing like now. And I said, you don't want to go over hating me, do you? And she started crying and she said, no. And that broke the dam. And from there on, we started having this wonderful healing session and class and projection for the next couple hours. And the sweet, loving soul was back. So that's my example.
Wow, that is intense. My wife and I are characteristic relatives toward the end of life, and professionally I worked supervising home attendants for a while, so I had to deal with a lot of end-life issues and circumstances. I know what you went through is very intense, and thank you so much for sharing it.
Well, it was even more so because, you know, and I don't want to get into a really long story, but that was my second caregiving experience only. And my first, because as I said, we never used doctors or meds or anything like that. And my first was caring for my mom when she was dying of cancer and I was 15. And that was such a traumatic experience for me without getting into details that, you know, even just doing this job this second time was, you know, a huge overcoming for me.
Wow. Now, I'll let William talk first, and then I have a question I'm going to ask both of you. Thank you, Lonnie. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
William, you'd wanted to add something.
I'm trying to remember what it was. I got into so hearing Lonnie's. That was an amazing experience she had. I was here. I know the person she's talking about, but I don't remember it being that intense. But wow, what an experience and what an example.
Thank you so much for sharing it. And that was very brave of you, not only to be there for the people you were there for, during that very troubling time, but also to share it on tonight's conversation.
Well, I mean, that's what I see as a way that, you know, we can help others if we are able to take intense problems and turn them around to the positive using the Unarian principles. I mean, I love sharing that. It's just, it affected me again in the moment as I, you know, it kind of like summarized it as much as I could in a nutshell. Then it was like the whole intensity of the experience came back. But I'm really, even though I was tearing again, I'm very happy to share it. And it's like that's one of my purposes in life, if it can help anybody else. Because I know a lot of people go through that. I mean, we're not really trained in school in any level of school to take care of, you know, our parents when they become children again. You know, it's like when they're there really aren't any great classes for that. So, you know, people find themselves not knowing what to do. And a lot of times, and this will probably come into the work conversation, but a lot of times they'll just put them in these, you know, nursing homes or, and leave them there. They don't even bother to come and visit them again because they just, they feel guilty. They feel inadequate. You know, they don't know how to deal with a parent who, you know, either doesn't recognize them anymore or, you know, just what to say to someone who's like a child now, you know, especially with so the increase in Alzheimer's and dementia and memory care and stuff in having worked in those facilities. It's like, I know of what I speak. And there were very few kids and adult relatives and stuff, friends even, that came to visit them. So it's sad. It's sad. It's something. It states something about our culture. But I'm just saying. I think a lot of people could relate to that because of the aging population. You know, the people are living longer, and you know, Social Security isn't necessarily covering it, or you know, as I said, people don't know how to deal with it. So, you know, it's out there, and it needs to be talked about.
Well, if I can add too, you know, that's another thing that I can add as far as being a UNARIS student is no matter what it is, whether it's a job from hell, it always turns into be a job from heaven because we're drawn to people that we have been with and that we have worked with in past lifetimes because of things that we need to work out, whether or not it's a sick person. I know there's a lot of times that I got referred by a person that wanted me to do some work, and it turned out that they just so happened to have some health issues and things of that nature. So it wasn't an accident. There's never an accident of why we are attracted to do whatever we need to do or what we are asked to do by someone. Because I know as soon as I get a referral and I don't even know the people, I already know up front that, you know, there's some things that's going to come into my life by working with this person that's going to teach me even more about myself. So I guess when you look at it, there's no such things as jobs from hell because they're all teaching centers. Every job is a teaching center, I know for myself, because by working the science of self-mastery through UNARIS, I love my job. It wouldn't matter if I did it to the day I die without retiring because I love my work. I love the guys I work with. I know, you know, they used to always call me boss, and I reacted to it. Because, you know, of my past and my guilt of where they were slaves. And so now they know, they don't ever call me boss anymore because I finally got through that. I said, guys, stop calling me boss. Just call me William. You know, we're all working together. I don't work for you and you don't work for me. And you know what? It's come so good. You know, I've got so many good guys that work for me and do such quality work, and my clients always love them, and it's because of the relationship that we have with each other. We work as a group consciousness, not as a separate consciousness, but we all work together.
That is good. It is good that you're able to resolve things from past life and to make the present life more pleasant and humane for everybody around you.
Yes, that science of cause and effect. It always works. It's infinite, and it always works.
Now, both of you have mentioned a couple of things that for folks who are unfamiliar with UNARIS, some explanation might be needed. Lonnie, you referred to a journal, and UNARIANS, they write in the journal to remain aware and conscious and to process things. Can you share the process of keeping a journal?
Yeah. So, you know, and some people might call it a diary or a stream of consciousness or something. But the point of writing it is a lot of times if we just keep things in our head, we kind of go either round and round and round with the same thoughts or, you know, we're judging them. So it's to get it out of your head, you know, put it on paper, and you can be a little bit more objective with it. And also, as you're writing, you start to see clues or you see things happening, and especially if you have an open mind and you're asking the Unarian brothers, our teachers, for help, then you have that open state of consciousness. Then they can kind of drop in some pictures, images, or, you know, in your dream state or something, but it comes from emptying your head of those things that you keep going around with, especially, you know, negative things. So it's like, you know, I hate that person. I mean, they did this to me. You know, they tried to make me look bad. You know, blah, 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 blah. You know, you keep, I don't know if you do this, Hercules, but I know it's a common pattern, a thought pattern, to just go round and round and round, and you keep getting more and more into a negative state. So by putting it on paper, you know, you kind of get it out of your head, and you can also, you know, expand. I find that, you know, more thoughts come to me as I get rid of, you know, it's like I make space in my head for something else by emptying that out, all that junk out, you know, then I have room for new thoughts. So it's very, very helpful to put it down, as I said, for that emptying process, for having an open, receptive mind to receive more information, and also for seeing clues, you know, as things, you know, you see repetitive actions or, you know, you notice new things, you get more new information.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. I've learned, I meditate twice a day now, and I remain very conscious of my thinking so that when I start falling into those vicious little circles, I could very easily catch them and make sure that they don't go around the squirrel cage of my mind. But yes, whatever technique somebody uses, it's very helpful to be aware of what's going on inside of you. And because it's unseen, we think it's okay, but it actually creates the reality around us. So I find that it's important to monitor our thoughts and to intervene if our thoughts start going down those pathways. William?
Yeah, because a lot of people, hang on just a second, I want to finish my thought. So a lot of people aren't aware of what they're thinking. So, you know, if you haven't done this, like you've probably done it for a long time, so, you know, you're aware of your thoughts. But a lot of people aren't even aware of their thinking and, you know, how negative it is, too. It's like, well, I'm a nice person. And then you get all this junk out, you know, and you say, oh, you know, that wasn't really so nice. But supposedly nobody else is going to see it, so you can be honest. And that's really important that you're honest and you let it all out. Go ahead, William. Sorry.
Yeah, can I add something, Hercules?
Yes, of course, sir.
Back as far as the journal has helped me so much, and there's a scientific principle behind it. Have you ever taken a screwdriver or a wrench and crossed a positive pole to a negative pole on a battery?
I can't say I have.
Well, if you did, you would get a spark, and that spark is a polarization. When you go in your journal and you just simply ask a question, why do I feel this way, you know, over a particular problem you're going through? And when you do that scientific principle, you know, Jesus himself was such a master. He wasn't a religionist. He was a scientist. And one of the main things that Jesus wrote was, knock on the door and all things shall come unto you. That door is your mind. And when you sit down, and the journal is a great example, when you do that and you touch those two terminals together, you create a spark. A new intelligence starts to come into your mind. And I've done that so many times where, you know, I've used the journal, and I wasn't really expecting a lot, but all of a sudden I've written two to three pages. And I'll sit down and I'll look at that and I'll say just what you just did. Wow. I had no idea that that information was in there, but I simply had to ask for it.
I record my dreams and my meditations and my whatever experiences I have that aren't on beta brainwave level, and you know, waking consciousness throughout the day.
Oh, that's right. That's
and there too, a lot of times, you know, when I go back and I read what I wrote, new thoughts come back to me, new associations are made, and all sorts of flood of information that I'm getting. And I know that the Unarian Brothers answer. I'll give an example. I guess picked up, would be the correct word, Herodotus, when I was reading the Return to Atlantis series. Herodotus appeared to me. So I asked him some questions about his writings, the histories that always puzzled me. And without missing a beat, he explained them all in very great detail, some other things that he had written in the histories that pertained to the question I had asked him. So you will get answers. Maybe not as I got mine, but you will get answers.
That's great, Hercules. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. One of the things I forgot to mention is as you write, you don't want to judge it. You know, you just kind of need to, I mean, not get buried in negativity, but let it all out as it comes out. Because then when you go back and look at it, it's just like, oh, you know, you haven't filtered it at all. Here's a picture of the gunk that's down, you know, buried inside you, and don't you want to do something about it? And I'll give you an example of another student that always comes to mind. It actually wasn't a journal. It was a letter she wrote, but same concept, because she could have written it in her journal. But she was going to send it to her ex-husband about all of these things that, you know, were wrong about him. And she made this long list of, you know, this, you know, I don't like this, and this is not right, and blah, 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 blah. And she made this long letter, and she said, you know, and then I realized I'm a student, and, you know, what you see in others is in yourself. So she went back to this list, and she said, you know what? I could find those, every one of those items, I could see how, you know, I did something similar, you know, maybe not in the same context, but it was within me as well. And she said she was so surprised about it. She never did send it to him, you know, but she said that was such a huge learning lesson by just, you know, getting it out. And yes, it was critical of the other person, but it was what she thought, and she needed to see that on paper, you know, and then she could be more analytical about it.
And it's important to be aware of that. I remember when I used to, I worked in various hospitals and psychiatric units and in the departments of psychiatric rehabilitation, and I set up internship programs. And that was one of the assignments I used to give students, you know, to be careful when people are soapboxing. And if they find themselves soapboxing, to ask themselves immediately afterwards, who am I talking about really? And on exploration, it's always yourself or someone very close to you that you're addressing when you're soapboxing. And that becomes a profound realization. And if you follow it, you begin to see that a lot of the negativity that you're projecting is actually, as you guys both shared, inside yourself and needs to be faced and resolved. Otherwise, you keep living it out with other people.
Yeah, when we say something like this, you know, we say it, it's not just like a maxim or something. That's what I love about Unarius, is it explains these concepts in scientific terms, in terms of energy. So, you know, the reason that you're able to see this, whether it's a positive thing or a negative thing, either one, the reason that you're able to see it, you know, it goes, Unarius goes into the process of how you see things, you know, that energy comes into your eyes, et cetera. I mean, I'll shorten it. But basically, it in order for you to recognize what you're seeing, it has to find other similar frequencies within your psychic anatomy. And when those resonate, you know, all the different times that you've, you know, looked at a leaf or, you know, sat in a chair or, you know, driven or whatever, you know, all of those experiences come to the fore, and that informs you what to do, how to react to those energies that are coming into your eyes. So it tells you, okay, well, that's a chair, and what you do, the next actions are that you sit down in it. Or, you know, that's a person that you know and you like, so, you know, your next thing is to go over there and hug them. Or, you know, whatever it is, it's when those energies come through your eyes and go to your brain, just in a simple form, you know, they're looking for whatever other energies are of the same nature. So, you know, which energies resonate when that energy, incoming energy comes in, right? You know, and that tells you how to react. So,
frequency and harmonics.
And if there was no energies to resonate, you wouldn't even see that thing. You wouldn't
right.
notice it. You could be looking right at it, and you wouldn't notice because there's nothing that's coming back to your brain that's telling you what it is or how to respond.
That's a very good point. Thank you, Lonnie. William?
Oh, I was just talking about, yeah, the frequency and harmonic relationship. You know, there's a place in one of the Unarius books where Ernest Norman talks about where the two people were in a zoo, and there's a giraffe right in front of them, and the man speaks to his wife and says, you know, I don't believe there is such an animal. Because it's right there in front of him, but it's not in his psyche. You know, that now I'm wondering, you know, now that he has seen it, in his next life, he probably wouldn't say that. But if it's not recorded in your psychic anatomy, which is like a hard drive in a computer, it's not going to be there. You're not going to see it. So it makes also you go through life. I wonder how many things we look at that we actually don't see because it's not in our, it hadn't been recorded yet. So that's an interesting thing to look at too.
That is fascinating. For the past year, I've been studying within myself how much of the reality you're experiencing your brain concocts, because your brain isn't always accurate. It sometimes throws things, perceptions in a messy way. And this happens to everybody when they can swear a sign that their reading said something and then it didn't. Or, some of the things that are considered paranormal, too, are actually perceptions. And I train myself by looking at optical illusions and knowing that basically my eyes are contradicting what my brain is saying is there. But anyway, that's a topic for another show.
It's kind of like, you know, an accident. 10 people could see the same accident and they'd all come away and describe it differently, you know, according to what they saw, meaning what was already in their psychic anatomy, you know, what was important to them. Or another example would be like the five men and the elephant and feeling different parts and so on and so forth.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, because I'm enjoying this conversation a great deal, but unfortunately, we only have like 12 minutes left.
Hercules, I hate to interrupt you, but your voice is breaking up. If there's anything that you can do about it, it's like
it's breaking up really bad.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes.
That's better.
Okay. We only have a little bit more than 10 minutes left, so I want to leave our audience with something. How would folks start becoming aware of past lives? Like, how do they know that it's not just their imagination when they're experiencing these memories?
Go ahead. Go away, William.
Well, I was just going to say is, before I got into Unarius, I was, like I said, I was just living my life like I was supposed to or thought I was supposed to be doing. Went along with friends that I met and did what they did and things like that. But when I was introduced to Unarius, it's like it opened a higher eye, like a sixth sense that I didn't know I had. And when I started studying the books, I was led to a different way of life. I started seeing things differently. Even the friends that I had noticed a difference in me, and we ended up not hanging out with each other anymore. It's like I was at this level, and now I went up to this level, and they're still where I was. So it's like they're looking at me as being weird.
So, mm.
What happened was is I became unknowingly more intelligent. At the time, I started noticing things differently. I started appreciating things around me. And what the way I learned about how am I reliving a past life is when I would go through a problem, I would stop right there where I was, and I would look. I would look around me, you know, at how I'm living and what is being reflected to me that I don't like. Because if there's something that I don't like, or if it's something I'm reacting to, it's right there proof that I've lived before, because I will react over something that I haven't experienced in this life. So it must mean proof that I had to see it somewhere for me to be reacting. It's like when you hear one of those big trucks back up in reverse, you hear that beep, beep, beep sound. That inner self of mine is beeping, saying, hello, you know, it's time to listen. And at that time also, if you're reliving something, I've noticed too in a particular cycle that I might be going through, I take notice of conversations of what is around me. I could be in a restaurant. I might overhear a conversation in another table. And a lot of times it's clues of what I'm reliving. And when I conceive it and take it within myself and I see a change in the way I was feeling or the change in my reaction, and all of a sudden I'm smiling big from ear to ear, it shows me that it's not an imagination, that the truth of the fruits, the truth of the fruits that I'm using in my life. And again, that science of cause and effect, there's an effect going on, so there's a cause somewhere. It's like my, for example, a short example of my fear of cold, deep water. In this life, I have not been in cold, deep water. So why would I fear it? It's because my recognition of where I have gone down, and especially in the Middle Ages, or when the big sail ships came over, and they went through storms, and I've even seen myself floating in the water in shark-infested waters where I was actually taken out by a shark. I mean, I've seen it. And I felt it in pain that I had within my ribs, and which went away, you know, when I had the realization. So, but there's multiple waveforms. It's not just one thing. But as far as the imagination term, there's no such thing as an imagination. If you feel something or see something, or even if you, Hercules, you said that you write down dreams and stuff. That is most important, because dream state, you're out of your body. I've had so many experiences of waking up the next morning and I'm going, where was that place? Uh-huh. You know, and as I write down a dream, there's so many lessons in it, and I'm sure you've probably seen that as well. I mean, the lessons will come out, and every dream makes sense. It's places you've been, it's places you've done, and I've even had dreams of things to watch for. You know, things that I'm going through in my life, or even jobs and things like that. So, it's really good to listen, because this higher self that we're developing, that super conscious self, is very real, and it'll come through and help guide us. No matter what we're going through, whether it's pain, disease, or whatever, it all comes through, and it's proof. Proof of it, like I said, that these fruits that we listen to through our higher selves are not imaginations. It's where we've been, and it's past, present, and future, and it helps us to know where we're going.
Thank you so very much. And Lonnie, we have a couple of minutes, and then we can give contact information for Unarius. I wish we had an hour and a half.
All right. Well, just being aware of, you know, science of energy, that it can't be created or destroyed. So when you, quote unquote, die, you lose your physical anatomy, that it continues on. And so that energy from, you know, you wanted to know how people be aware of, you know, past lives, that whatever is happening in your present life has happened before. And so, again, kind of recapping what we talked about with the journal, as you write down your thoughts and experiences and stuff and start to see patterns, you'll see, and especially if it doesn't make sense in this lifetime, kind of as William was saying, you know, these, you have this reaction to someone who you've never met before, or attraction, you know, it can go both ways. So as you see these things that don't seem to make sense in the present, realizing that there is a continuity of energy, that we are energy beings and we're eternal, you know, and we're just here. Life is a schoolroom. You know, we put on this physical coat. But as you find out about your past lives, it can explain so many things, and that's the purpose of Unarius and Past Life Therapy, you know, is discovering who we are so that we can resolve our current problems, master them, and go forward in our in a progressive evolution. So trying to put it in a nutshell there.
Thank you, Lonnie. I think Unarius is wonderful, and I'm glad that it's here on the planet, and I thank all of you for keeping that torch burning brightly. How can people find their way to Unarius and experience the knowledge that Unarius has been vouchsafing for our world?
Well, probably the easiest way is to go to the website, because you can find everything on there, which is the name of the academy, Unarius, unarius.org, R-G. And then we have a YouTube channel, we have a Facebook, we have Vimeo. They can see little clips on YouTube of our numerous videos, or they can see whole videos on our Vimeo channel. We have events coming up. We have classes. So all of that information is on the unarius.org website. So that's a good place to start with not having to remember much, but having access to all the different ways. Again, we have classes. We're going to have specifically some beginner classes each month. So, you know, if they haven't been exposed before and they can participate via Zoom, they can just watch, or they can, you know, interact, or they can come to the center on Sundays. We have the first class is free. You can see what it's all about. Or Wednesday nights from 7 to 8:30, it's on Zoom. So, you know, just contact us and say, you know, you'd like to know more about, you know, whatever it is. And or we can also send out free literature if people are interested.
Thank you so very much. William, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
Oh, all I can say about that is ditto. We always look forward, and we always look forward to people contacting to Unarius, the science of life that helps change your life, you know, where you think everything is good, but there's so many better ways to go to learn about life. And I want to say we always appreciate you, Hercules. I think you're a grand person, and want to appreciate your invite. And I hope you have a grand, positive, and safe weekend and week.
Ditto to you and to Lonnie. Thanks again, both of you. I had a great time, and again, I wish we had more time. I'll be emailing both of you soon to have you back on. Be well. Take care, and thanks.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.